Hey guys, on this episode of EdTech, we're going to be talking with Scott Tyner and Rob Raspberry as we talk about return on investment in classrooms. We're going to be talking about must-haves versus nice-to-haves and Viamp's acquisition of CrowdMics. All this and more on EdTech.
The network for the AV industry.
What are you listening to?
This
is AV.
This is AV Nation.
This is AV Nation.
This is EdTech, episode 71, ROI in the Classroom.
Support for AV Nation is brought to you by
Extron, industry-leading technology backed by world-class support.
And by Chief, the global leader in commercial AV mounting solutions.
This is EdTech, the monthly higher ed tech podcast. I'm your host, Bill O'Donnell, and this month I'm joined by Mr. Rob Raspberry.
Greetings.
How are you? And as well, Mr. Scott Tyner, how are you, sir?
Thanks, Bill, for having me. I thought I might not be invited again after the Patriots ran over all the other football teams, but I'm glad that I was.
Listen, I just me being a loyal Giants fan, the only thing I can take away from this is that we have a number one draft. We have a first round draft pick. Knowing our luck, we're going to still squander it. Moving on. Anyways. With everything going on with the new year and everything, just recently we had ISE come through, which, if you're not familiar, is Integrated Systems Europe, which is, you know, for the most part, has kind of taken over. It's like a mix of CEDIA and Infocom and CES for Europe. I kid you not, a couple of years back, I was there and, you know, there was like the audio pavilion, there's the video pavilion, there's the digital signage, the whole thing. And it's usually held in at the Ray Center in Amsterdam. However, in the future, I believe they're going to be moving to Barcelona. So yay for Tapas in the future. Anyways, a couple of the interesting things that popped out of it was the fact that if you look on there, it turns out that Biamp actually went and debuted and showed off their partnership. Their partnership with a company that they recently acquired, and that is CrowdMics. Now, if you're not familiar with CrowdMics, it is, as I say, essentially it could turn your smartphone into a wireless mic. So, you know, you didn't have to have folks running around or, you know, having a catch mic or anything like that. It was literally just you download the app, as long as they have a little hardware box, as long as it's connected to a audio mixer, you could go and control through and send things back and forth. Now, last month, we had actually talked with Scott about his article about, you know, mic placement and more specifically what folks hear and everything. So, Scott, I want to take your I want to hear your thoughts on this because it's one of these things where, depending on how Biamp actually does this, is this, you know, if they actually make it and say, oh yeah, here's the hardware box separate. You know, would this really be something that we could actually, like, you know, say deploy, or is it just really one of those, this is cool for the auditorium, don't you dare put this in, you know, I could see it in an active learning space, but I just want to have your thoughts on this one.
Yeah, when I looked at this, it actually really excited me. I think that this has huge potential. I think it is disruptive, actually, to the whole audio world, the whole microphone world. And I think the headline of the article we read, which was that Biamp is about to activate 3 billion microphones, is kind of just shows the power of this. And the idea that, I mean, I think they could even sell this box for, you know, a lot of money because you're not having to put in all these microphones. Mm-hmm. You buy this box, you stick it in a room, and people just take out their microphones and talk. The other really interesting thing about this for me is I've always been somebody who has said, when people walk into a classroom and you tell them to put their phones away, put their computers away, you're essentially telling them that they're not in the real world. And so this is one of those ways to say, all right, take your phone out. We're actually going to use it here in class. It has the polling features. It has a microphone feature. I'm really interested in this, and I can't wait to learn more about it and read more about it.
Yeah, that's the other thing I find that I like about this is the fact that you also have polling data and everything. Now, This is, you know, coming from someone who worked in pharmaceutical and worked in the Department of Defense realm. My only concern is this, and this is the other thing too. Keep in mind, it's not like there are any like state secrets that go on when we do a big polling, a big polling of Q&A. However, you know as well as I do that certain faculty members do get kind of, will get rather particular as to, who saw my data? And it's not totally a privacy thing. I think with the faculty members, it's really more of, I think they don't want their stuff getting into other folks' hands. Okay, so maybe that is a privacy thing. Moving on. Scott, you look like you got something going there.
No, I that's the other thing I really thought about when I read this, but I thought more about, it's opening up people's eyes, and I know we're going to get these questions about, oh, wait a minute, that phone's kind of listening to me, that phone, other people can connect to that phone and hear what's going on. So it I don't know if it raises privacy concerns, but it raises the awareness of privacy issues for sure.
Yeah, now that's one of those things I think that's going to be one of those kind of give and takes, and Rob, I'll get to you with this one, is that, say, for example, you had the handy dandy app on your phone. I think one of the things that might alleviate some folks' fear on that one is, and this is always a great debate as to whether or not the mic's muted or not, and whether it's open or not, because depending on the manufacturer, some of us would go and say, "Oh, well, green would mean it's open, and red would mean it's closed." Well. True, but I also have dealt with folks who have also dealt with audio with microphone manufacturers who are like, "Oh no, the red light on means it's on." I'm like, so there has to be this almost kind of like I think there's going to be some ways where it has to kind of alleviate folks and alleviate folks' fears, in which it says, the mic is muted, or some sort of at least just easy visual, red means stop, green means go kind of thing. And Rob, you're just looking at me like going.
Scott, I'm not sure this is per se a game changer because, think about what we're using right now, Zoom. Mm-hmm. You could technically download the app on your phone and dial in and connect into a meeting and you're good. So in a way, this is, I have to take a look at the app, but it's somewhat similar, but you're right. I mean, the fact that you walk into a classroom, download the app and you're able to talk from your phone is great. I guess the way it's used might be a little different because you're saying that this now is a microphone. You don't have to install all these microphones in the room, but we can use that on some platforms already. So I'm curious to see how it works. I'd love to see it in action to see, how it's applied. And of course, you do have to have a moderator if you're having a classroom, because you're right. People will naturally leave their microphones unmuted and start talking about all kinds of stuff. And we've seen that many times before.
Oh yeah.
And, I think that if it economically makes sense, and it could very well make sense, then people will be wondering about it. But the privacy point on the phone, I don't know. I think people are probably somewhat aware of it. I think it's great. I think walking into a meeting room and then just, having people use your phones is wonderful. Now my question is what's the audio quality like? Is it as good? I know the phones are pretty good these days. Is it the same experience as you would have with, a ceiling array microphone in a classroom? I'm just curious about it.
Now that one, that's the one I think is going to be the fun bit, is because, as well as I do, now most folks are usually used to, having it right up to their headset, or say maybe using a Bluetooth extension. My money now, as far as audio quality, I'm going to guarantee it right now. At least the first half dozen versions are going to be folks like this. Yeah, so this and that, and it's like, no, you can just hold it up to you. Either that or the usual mic eating routine, of which they bring it up like it's like it's the ye olde CB radio clicker. But that's just my theory.
Yeah, and I think, Robert, I think that some of your points were really valid, which is, it's very easy to sit here and say, oh my gosh, this is so cool. But so many times we see these things come out and they're near impossible to use, right? You've got to download it, you got to put in these numbers, you got to connect to this and that. But the other interesting piece, and one of the ones I wonder about is, as far as quality goes, is if there's a delay. which is going to be an issue, of course. But then another really interesting thing would be if we could also, for hearing impaired people, turn this around and put the audio back through the phone on that app with them wearing, you know, a set of headphones plugged in or maybe some AirPods plugged in. And again, there might be a delay there, but if anybody's ever looked at the price of hearing aids or the price of putting in some kind of loop into the room, it's outrageous. And so you could do this, you know, in every room. So that would be another really exciting thing if they added it to this.
Yeah, that's which actually brings up, we saw it, I think, at Infocom last year. Ernie actually brought this up. Williams Sound actually made a just a straight audio over IP streaming box. But the nice trick about it was that you could download the app and you could listen to it anywhere you wanted. So, you know, you could, if you really wanted to get into the nitty gritty of it, and I believe it had a Dante bus, you could hypothetically go and make, you know, assisted listening channels for just about every classroom you could think of and put it on the smartphone. The back end of that is, as I say, man, I just feel bad for the programmer who would have to like route that back, as well as also be the one who actually updates the app for that thing. But that's just because, you know, the folks behind me might be the campus AV controls programmer guys, and anytime any kind of changes come up, it's like, yeah, sure, or what? But anyway, now one of the other things that popped up, and I think it's cool. It's it's a growth in things, and that is Audinate update did an update to Dante. If you're not familiar with Dante, it is a originally it was a audio over IP protocol, to which now they've actually added video, which, you know, I looked at and went cool, and then once you dig deeper into it. I believe it's in the same realm as JPEG 2000, which once again, it's the eventual move of everyone going over to AV over IP. there's still, as I say, there's still a number of things that I think need to still get kind of hammered out and everything. With that, I'm going to go and say the automatics are bandwidth as well as jitter and delay. Now, you know, once again, it's in the same format as, you know, a bunch of us can kind of remember the original version of HD Base T, in which you had both the D, the M cable, and the call it whatever you want, the AXLink, CrestNet, four wires, death. You know, when they would go and say, "Oh, it's just a single wire." I think it's a good move. It's just, it's one of those things where it's going to get, it just has to kind of move along with these things. And Scott, you're just kind of like, I can already see you've got this one wound up. So go ahead.
No, actually I was actually laughing at the last thing you said about the original, because it was all one wire, right? They took the three wires and they bundled it all in one big wrapping. Therefore it was just one wire. I'm going to let Rob go ahead and take that.
You know, this really boils down, I think, to resources and Bill and Scott. You know, it's, you know, you're talking about, you know, the format that you're delivering video on. And I think as our networks continue to be able to handle more and more bandwidth, I think that kind of stuff becomes, you know, less of an issue. And then when they, you know, come up with even an even more compressed delivery method for video, I don't think it's going to be that big of an issue, depending upon, you know, how many classrooms or how many sessions you're using. Yeah. You know, it then, you know, comes down to the whole thing of the AV/IT converging and each one knowing exactly what's happening and how to put devices on the network and systems and Dante and all this other stuff. But I think it just seems to be a natural progression. I mean, it was less than what, 2 or 3 years ago? You know, we're sitting at UBTech or Infocom and they're talking about, yeah, you know, this one university is like, you know, doing, you know, all the control systems and stuff over the network. And, you know, now here we are in 2019 and everybody seems to be jumping on board with AV and audio and video over IP. So
yeah, it's one of those things. they're like I said, it's getting straightened out. If you want to learn more about these kinds of things, it's a mouthful, but it is actually very helpful. It's the SDVOE Alliance, which is software over I'm just going to say, go check it out for yourself. That's what I'm going to say on that one, because even my brain is having trouble at this hour. And not even, as I say, hold on a sec.
Bill, I actually have to say, when Robert and I were both talking about AV over IP, we both messed up our mute buttons. And I wonder if that was some kind of Freudian slip about what we think of audio over IP.
Uh-oh. As I say, oh dear. Looks like Audinate's starting to develop AI on its back end. Anyways. All right. The other article we have comes to you from Rave Pubs, and that is Mr. Scott Tyner's own Tyner take here. And that is ROI in higher education. So Mr. Tyner, if you don't mind, I know this is your baby, so you can have a little fun chat with us. And it does tie back into our whole discussion here, in which certain things you look and go and say, oh, that's really cool, but is it really worth it? So, I'll let you have a bit with this.
Yeah, when I was thinking about this, we've talked about, and I'm sure anybody who's in higher ed has talked about this before, when you look at putting something in a room, what's the value of it? And you can't do it just because it's cool. You can't always do it just because you think a faculty member may use it. And this particularly for me comes around the news of lots of schools closing, lots of schools merging. It's happening all the time. And I think, in the article I wrote that since 2016, over 70 colleges have either closed or merged, many of them having closed. And so there's a piece to me. I think I always say it at work, and the people that work with me always say, boy, if this was a business, we'd be doing X, Y, Z. And I think that more and more, we have to think about some of these things as a business. So I talk about in here where, when we put in a class capture, we really have to think about how many times that's getting used, why it's getting used, what are the faculty doing with it. And we pull those numbers, we report on those numbers. And for us, there was a time where we were thinking, we're going to put class capture everywhere. And as we look at this, we said, well, it doesn't really make sense to put it everywhere. Here's where we're going to put it. And maybe even go back at times and look at the use of it in a certain space and move it to another place if it's not getting the return on investment that it needs to.
Yeah, the one of the things, and this has popped up here and there, the class capture system, take from me what you will from it. Some places like to have, a one button studio. Others like to have, we'll record in live time and this and that. And I'm going to tell you, it does depend on the school. Here, I won't lie. We many moons ago had this system called Tegrity, and we installed webcams. They were just basic USB webcams like you have here. Maybe the telephoto lens was gussied up a little bit or something. But the thing that ended up happening was that some of the science department would use it, and some of the other science department would look and go and say, we'd come in and there'd be like a tack of paper hanging up right in front of the camera and everything because just, they had their own privacy stuff or they thought they were being, being watched and everything else. And, I'd happily tell them, no, our data center is not as big as you think it is. But I think it does depend on the school. And Rob, I know for you guys, you do a fair amount of class capture and everything, but is that part of, this is something I'm going to ask both of you. Was it something that was originally a standard and that became case by case, or has it been the other way around? Or is it just one of those, we have to hear the bubbling up from either department chairs or faculty, or is it just, does the CIO says this, carry the water?
So it's really more a case by case, and it really has never been a standard. Mm-hmm. I think in a way offering the option to have a class recorded would be, great. But the reality is that not every school, not every curriculum, not every program requires it or even wants it. So a number of years ago, we jumped on when MediaSite first, you know, entered the fray and put it in a few classrooms as a showcase to technology. And from there, it gained traction. Computer science, engineering, these type of schools really lost. They saw great value in it. But even some of the general schools in arts and sciences and some other places didn't really have a need for it. And so it really is was a case-by-case basis. We were trying to institute it to make it sort of a standard, but it never caught complete ground. Now, there obviously is value in it. And you have to look at a platform or a technology to make sure that you're going to get enough use out of it to put the investment into the technology or into the product. And so even as we talk now, we're looking at trying to find a platform basically to offer to various schools. And you have to involve, you know, the partners and the people who are going to invest and come together with a group and decide, you know, look at your metrics, see what the usage is to justify what you have. And it used to sort of not be that way. If something was cool, we'd say, okay, let's put it in there and showcase it and see what happens, sort of like a real sandbox. But as far as it goes now, that certainly isn't the case. You have to be able to justify what you're putting into. So like, you know, smart boards. Used to be the coolest thing ever. Now you can annotate pretty much on anything. So why are you putting smart boards or any kind of smart displays per se into a classroom when you can either just, you know, and you know, when the price point's gone down on, you know, the ability to annotate on things.
Oh yeah. No, the now this is the one little trick or twist that I've seen with that. And you mentioned smart boards and you mentioned annotation and everything else. It's for us, the classroom capture portion has really kind of gone over to, it's more of the College of Education. Now for New Jersey, a fun little bit on us, or at least maybe in, as far as our school's curriculum is concerned, they actually require a certain amount of their teaching or their student teaching to be recorded. And so, yeah. And so we actually found a manufacturer that went and they set up a recording app. You can put that onto you an iPad and, you know, you put a little track, you put like a little Bluetooth tracker on there. And then it also had a little swivel pad. So literally you plunked you had a little camera that attached to the swivel pad. You put the iPad on, you know, in the back of the room. And as you walked back and forth, literally the iPad just went, brr, brr. But it was a low cost alternative because to try to do it on a large scale, like, you know, as I say that you or I would do, that would be a ton of money. And I won't lie. Our school is going through a budgetary shortfall right now. Other schools have gone through it. Scott probably, you know, Scott covered it in the article. There are places where the schools are looking, going, saying, that's really cool. Is this a nice to have or is this a must have?
Right.
In our case, we kind of got thrown behind the eight ball because the state of New Jersey says, no, it's a must-have. And you're like, dang it.
Yeah. So like, I'll give you a couple other quick examples. Laser projectors and regular projectors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You're able to justify because you're not replacing bulbs, which cost a quarter of what the projector originally did. And you have a much longer duration of life on the projector because you're not replacing the bulbs. It lasts much longer. You can use it much longer. It's much more durable. That's an easy justification for a technology to put into your classroom or say, you know, and, or to go even another way, you know, the displays versus projectors in certain spaces, that kind of thing.
You'll probably end up replacing the motors and the projector screen before you replace the
Right, there you go.
Which I've done, which I'm starting to do.
Right, and maybe I shouldn't say this, but like in our evaluation period right now, I mean, you have the ability with Zoom to record a session. So in the interim, we have basically said to people, hey, if you need to record a class and you're on a lecture, open a Zoom session up, record it. It'll work in a pinch, you know, until we decide, you know, what higher end stuff we can use and institute in the classroom. So, yeah, I mean, it's a case by case basis kind of thing. And I think, you know, unless you're a Fortune 500 company that can sort of take a look at, hey, this is really cool, let's put it in a couple places and see how it works. We really don't have that, you know, luxury.
So you guys didn't get the giant unlimited fund grant that Princeton had for their clean energy? Oh, wait a minute. I don't have that either. No, seriously, that actually, went through a fair amount of their endowment.
Right. So, you know, with, you know, Ivy League, hey.
Good for that. That's all I'm going
to say. The rule. Some institutions that'll get what pretty much what they want. Yeah. We ain't one of them.
No, Mr. Scott, any fun words there? You're just like looking at us going like, what on earth?
No, I hear you. And I think that everything we just talked about is about thinking about how to use your money wisely. Most of us don't have money just pouring into our departments. So doing what we can do the best to meet the strategic goals of the school is more and more on all of our minds.
Yeah. So anyways, sirs, excuse me. Once again, getting sick in February, not the best thing, not the best thing for one's lungs. Anyway, that being said, Mr. John, as I say, guys, the only quick thing I was going to ask is, we're going to be coming up probably on spring break, rather shortly, as weird as that sounds, but, do you guys have any fun projects coming along the way?
No, not really. I mean, we're bringing in some integrators to take a look at a couple of our larger auditoriums to give us some bids and ideas about how to refresh them. But just pretty much the standard, maintain the classrooms, take a look, do some refreshes, nothing unusual.
Fair enough. Mr. Tyner?
No, we are actually on spring break starting Monday here. Oh. You know, who wants to be in Maine in February? So they let all the students go home.
go back to the county.
We are one of our wonderful AV support people is out on paternity leave, for a few weeks. So we're kind of just making sure that the ship keeps running and looking at some projects for a couple years out for a couple of new buildings that we're putting up.
Fair enough. For me, I'm going to be having the fine folks from Mersive come by. And we're going to have some interesting chats about their dashboard integration, which if you've taken a look at it, I do like they literally just released a new software version for it. I like the ideas of some of the things they're putting forward. I'd like it a lot better if I could get their cloud-based dashboard to integrate a little bit better with our stuff, but that's going to be really one of those security slides. It's more of a security versus AV conversation, which at some point we'll probably have a good chat on that one. In any event, Scott, where can the fine folks find you online?
You can find me in Twitter universe at S Tyner, or you can find me on LinkedIn.
All right, Mr. Raspberry.
Once I unmute my mic. you can find me on LinkedIn, Rob Raspberry, or look at drexel.edu/IT and you'll find me in that department.
There we go. You can find me on LinkedIn as well. Once again, this is EdTech, a higher ed monthly tech podcast. I'm Bill O'Donnell. And once again, EdTech is a part of the AV Nation podcast. Once again, this is EdTech.